Hello, everyone in the US, Israel, Palestine, and other places in the world. Welcome to this latest installment of Conversations with Israel and Palestine, hosted by Partners for Progressive Israel. Conversations with Israel and Palestine is a series of informational webinars that bring voices from Israel and Palestine to an American audience, providing an important link between progressives in the US and in the Middle East. My name is Gilad Halpern. I'm an Israeli journalist, broadcaster, and media historian. I co-host a podcast about books and Israel and everything in between called The Tel Aviv Review, which I encourage you to listen to, but not before you've listened to this seminar. Over the next 60 minutes, I'll be serving as the discussion moderator. And before we get started, I'd just like to remind you that Partners for Progressive Israel is an American not-for-profit dedicated to the achievement of a durable and just peace between Israel and its neighbors, and believes in the need to ensure civil rights, equality, and social justice for all of Israel's inhabitants. Partners seeks to deepen American Jews' understanding of Israel's complexities in order to enhance their ability to advocate for a progressive Israeli future. Let me now introduce our two panelists today. Professor Naomi Chazan served three terms as a Meretz Party member of Knesset, and Professor Yoram Peri is a former political advisor to the late Prime Minister Yitzhak Rabin. Let me just add that the discussion will go on for about 40 minutes, after which we'll be answering questions from you, the audience. I encourage you to type in your questions at any time, starting now. You can do it at any time during the discussion. All you need to do is look at the bottom of your monitor for the icon that reads Q&A. You may need to touch your screen or run your mouse over it. Then click on the icon and type your question in the small box that appears. The webinar won't disappear or be disrupted. Please note that viewers' microphones are turned off and questions can only be asked when typed in this way. All right, so let's get started. Naomi, Yoram, welcome to this webinar.
Thank you for having me.
So all the participants in the audience can probably remember Kaveret, the legendary 1970s rock band, who, aside from the music, were famous for the comedy sketches. And one of these sketches was the story of Eudokalis Lipschitz, a somewhat depressive young man, whose parents repeatedly told him, "Cheer up, dear boy, things could always be worse." And then the narrator adds, "So he cheered up and things indeed got worse." Now, this reminded me of the current situation of the Israeli left. Just when we thought things hit rock bottom, we've realized that there are new lows that the left can sink to. So my first question to you is, how do you explain the fact that the left has fared more and more poorly over the last few years? Yoram, let's start with you.
We can tackle that question from different angles. I will start with only one, and which is demographic. What happened during the second Intifada, 2000 to 2005, that million young people, the millennials, the ones who got their political socialization during the Intifada, moved dramatically to the right. About 80% of them voted for the right. That was not the case for young people in earlier times. And that group of the young Israelis who voted for the first time and then the second time were added to two other groups that supported the right. Out of the million former Soviet Union immigrants, two-thirds of them, if not more, voted for the right. And a very large number of the North Africans and Mizrahi Jews voted for the right as well. To that, you have to add another element, which is the growing power of the religious, particularly the ultra-Orthodox, but also the national religious group. So you have four groups among Israeli people or voters who are almost naturally supporters of the right. And this process started many years ago with the Mizrahim, then came the religious people, then came the Russians, and then came the younger generation. And therefore, you have a structural phenomena that it will be very difficult to change in the near future. That is only one element. Later on, we can talk about ideology, politics, policy, people, leaders, but this structure of Israeli society gives a major advantage to the right-wing camp.
Naomi, do you agree that the demographic factor is the most decisive one? And if so, it seems almost irreversible that the left is and will be doomed forever.
I admit that there is a demographic element, but I think that I agree with your question, and that is, if you only think in demographic terms, then you end up with a very deterministic analysis of Israeli politics and essentially a feeling that nothing can be done. I think there's some much more important factors at work, and I'll just mention a few of them. I think the first and overriding factor in the move to the right during the past two decades is the fact that the possibility of peace has dimmed. In other words, the general consensus in Israel across a broad political spectrum is that we may hope for peace, we may desire peace, we may even have solutions like a two-state solution and variations thereof. But if you ask Israelis in poll after poll after poll whether they believe it's going to happen in the foreseeable future, the answer is no. And the right obviously gives a much better answer to surviving under conditions of no hope for peace than the left, who at its core wants to implement peace. That's one factor. A second factor is the dramatic turn to neoliberal economics in Israel, which has seen a surge in the Israeli economy, one, by the way, that is slowing down substantially, and Israel is headed for a much more dire economic period, where people have seen their lives improve in comparison to the past. I think, by the way, that factor is extremely important because neoliberal economics exacerbate socioeconomic differences, and Israel's income differentials are among the highest in the industrialized world. So that's a second factor. A third factor is, don't forget, Israelis have been living for at least the past 10 years under Netanyahu governments with a very strong penchant for majoritarian concepts of democracy, and in the last few years, very distinct anti-liberal policies and legislation, some verging on racist, a very strong neo-authoritarian streak, and populism, rampant populism, which we saw in the campaign. Now, all these things are reversible. They're reversible with smart politics, good organizing, and I would claim, above all else, very serious strategizing, something that has not occurred. Just one other small comment, if I may, because I'm sure Yoram wants to react. I think the left during the course of the past few years, has made every mistake in the book. But for a good portion of the period we're talking about, the Labour Party was part of these governments. And when it's part of these governments, how can one expect young voters to think of them as promoting a different agenda than the hegemonic agenda that we see today? So are the demographic trends sure? Are they very different than what we've known in the past? I'm not convinced at all.
So I'd like to pick up on this, Naomi, and ask you and Yoram. If Israelis don't really believe in the prospects of peace at the moment, if they're pretty happy with the economy at the moment, and it seems that they are not bothered by the government's onslaught on the democratic institutions, that the apparent indifference to the prime minister's very serious corruption allegations is just one aspect of it. Why is there even an alternative? Why would the Israeli public buy into the alternative that the left is offering them? So let me just perhaps rephrase the question and ask you, is it really it's just a question of strategizing? Do they really need to wait out on the current politics and see that their message and their agenda is vindicated and being more attractive to larger chunks of the Israeli public? Or do they need to do a more fundamental rebooting, perhaps, of their whole political program?
You want to
I don't know. I talked a lot, so maybe you go ahead.
All right. I'll answer with a caveat. First of all, I don't see the situation in deterministic terms. It can definitely change. After all, 3 months ago, we didn't expect a new party that be equal in power to the Likud. And the new party, Kahol Lavan, got 35 seats. No one thought that that can happen. So nothing is deterministic, and things can change. And there are very many factors that influence voters. I started by showing the structure of Israeli society before I thought that we'll move to policies and strategy, etc. So let me add another element regarding the structural structure of Israeli society, which explains the weakness of the left. In the near future, in the next few years, the left will not become the majority in Israel, because there is a structural problem there. 20% of the Israelis, which belong to the left, are considered illegitimate. I'm talking about the Israeli Arabs. So the first reaction that the left in Israel has to do, the progressive forces in Israel have to do, is to understand that what kept the progressive party in Poland between the two world war was the support of the Jews. In Israel, it's the same. What will change the balance of power between left and right is if the Israeli Arabs will join the camp. Without them, in the near future, there will be no change. And this is a very serious, deep, complicated, difficult process that the Israeli Jews have to go through. It will take time. It will need a lot of soul searching. If the leader of the left in his campaign praises himself for killing many Arabs, Palestinians, you have to really to change the entire way of thinking, the entire paradigm of the Israeli progressive camp. And without that, it will be more difficult. Maybe it might be done without them, but without them it will be much more difficult. Now, regarding the peace, though the issue of the Israeli-Arab conflict, the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, is the core of the problem, this is what stands behind or underneath our entire problem. This is not how the Israelis see it. They were looking at other things. They don't think that the Israeli-Palestinian issue is what was on stake. So what the left has to do is to bring back that notion, which it did not. It did not. They spoke about Netanyahu personally. They spoke about corruption. They spoke about the threat to the Israeli democracy. But very few people spoke about the essence of the major conflict, the core of our problem, which is peace. And that's something else that the left has to begin to think of. And in addition to that, you have a third element. Naomi spoke about neoliberalism. The left suffers from crisis all over the world when you deal with issues, social and economic issues. And Israel is not different than the Labour parties, social democratic parties in Europe and in other places. There's a lack of coherent thought among the left, and the left has to begin to develop a new concept, a new philosophy, a new way of thinking, a new paradigm. That's more complicated, the fact that we don't see that in other states in the West, but it can be done and it should be done.
Naomi, I'd like to ask you in relation to what your second point. Do you think that the left hasn't voiced its commitment to a peace process and a two-state solution enough during this campaign? Do you think that was a mistake?
I actually think your previous two questions would include that question as well. So I want to perhaps add on to what Yoram just said. And I want to do it exactly on the two levels that you suggested. You talked about the economy. You talked about democracy. You talked, and Yoram very, I think, articulately described the fact that Israeli society is unraveling. There are deep divides in Israeli society and a great deal of animosity, Arab, Jew, Mizrahi, Ashkenazi, periphery, center, and it goes on. Now, not everything is great. And the way people feel at a given moment in time is relative. It's relative to how they perceive their situation a year ago or 5 years ago. And I want to emphasize that economically and socially, there's a great deal of unrest within Israeli society and the economy today. But I want to address the democratic question. Democracy and democratic rights and liberalism and minority rights are not questions of right and left alone. And I think it would be a mistake in Israel, as in other parts of the world, to make that dichotomous kind of analysis because it doesn't reflect what's going on in Israel. I'll give you just several recent examples from the last few days. Netanyahu would love to be able to pass some legal instrument which would preclude him his being brought to trial for the probes. The greatest resistance now is within his own party. There is still a legacy in the Likud of liberalism dating back to Menachem Begin and Jabotinsky. A great number of very prominent ex-Likud politicians publicly opposed the Likud and joined Gantz and the Blue and White Party. Dan Meridor is a tremendous example, he used to be Minister of Justice, just around this issue. Young Israelis thrive on freedom of speech. They don't want that what they say and what they see and how they communicate be monitored by anyone. And therefore, I suggest that the democratic issue is very, very basic. And on the level of issues, I'm not as sanguine as you are, Gilad, that what was is going to be. People change and their situation changes and their context changes. And it goes on to other issues related to how Israel is seen in the world, etc. But I want to connect with what Yoram said and to the thrust of your question, your second question. You asked whether the left has to reboot itself. And my answer is definitely yes. You ask about a two-state solution. The polls are still showing a majority in Israel for a two-state solution. And if you break down the two-state solution into its component parts, the percentages rise well above 50%. Is it possible? I don't know. But when was the last time a broad coalition of parties, progressive, liberal, democratic parties in Israel, put together a clear, defined, very, very lucid vision of the kind of Israel they want to see and how to get there? I think you cannot keep talking about specific issues without putting it in a value-based framework which updates the most important document in Israel's history, and that's its Declaration of Independence. And here, Yoram and I agree, and we'll probably be spending a great deal of time, hopefully with many other of your viewers and listeners, to build, to do the rebooting the way it should have been done, probably 15, 20 years ago. And as I said earlier, and I repeat again, the most significant reason for the failure of the left in the past two decades is that it did not make clear where it was going. And if you don't know where you're going, you're not going to be able to get there.
The fascinating thing is that when you look at the Israelis and you ask them about their positions on different issues, all the positions of the left, including the territories and the Palestinians and peace and war. So, and social issues, they are leftist on social issues. Israel is very progressive on social issues. So the positions of the left are rooted among most of the Israelis, but the term left became so negative that they say, oh no, only 8% of them will say I am a lefty, because the Netanyahu, that was his major achievement, to make the term left such a terrible negative term. And if you look at their positions, then there is quite a good ground to start working on and to show the Israelis that the left is not such a terrible thing, because they are leftists. More of them are both leftists. But let me say something else, which is, again, structural, a structural problem of the Israeli left. The right was always, even 40, 50 years ago, very simplistic. The right has the nationalists at one flag, the national flag. The Labour Party, the Labour movement, had two flags. One was the national flag. The other was the red flag, the international flag, the flag of socialism. Social democracy, by the way, not communism. And Begin was capable of doing what Netanyahu is doing today, to say, oh, Labour Party is having the red flag. They support the Soviet Union. They support communism, which was a ridiculous point, of course. The same way that Galan talked about Gantz today that he is a disciple or supporter of Stalin. I mean, that's terrible. But it's much simpler here, for particularly for young people, to say, understand what one flag stands for. If you have two flags, how do you deal with it? This applies to four or five other issues, including the territories. While the nationalists had a very clear position, the land of Israel belonged to us, and therefore we're not going to give it back. The left said, yes, it belonged to us, but we're willing to compromise, and how much to compromise, and to give it to Jordan or to the Palestinians, and how much to give. So the issue, the position of the left was more complicated. The same applied to social and economic issues. The right has a very clear pro-capitalist, liberal, today we'll say neoliberal, positions, and the left had different. So the intellectual, ideological position of the left was always much more complicated than that of the right. And the left has to understand that, and as Nomi said, to sit down and to write down a clearly position about their new ideology and to put it strongly in front of the people.
Let me just cut in and say that our viewers and listeners can already send their questions. There have been some that have started coming in, so please, we're inviting more of those, and we'll turn to the Q&A shortly. But in the meantime, I'd like to ask you, okay, so it's a long-term process that we're envisaging now. And what do we do in the meantime? Because Netanyahu's government, his likely government, is bent on some policies that could be very difficult to roll back and could be long-lasting. And just to mention two examples, one is restricting the power of the Supreme Court, which is part of their explicit agenda. And the other one that Netanyahu and his coalition partners have been starting to talk about, which is annexation of parts of the West Bank and enacting Israeli law and basically declaring them Israeli territory, which will be a break from even from Likud's position so far. What do you think the left should or even could do vis-a-vis those policy suggestions, Naomi?
I'll start, and I'm sure Yoram will have a lot to answer. Again, I want to put it on two levels, because usually when we think, what can the left do, we think on the political level. And so I'll start with the political level. Don't forget that the present constellation in the Knesset is not much different than it was in the outgoing Knesset. It's similar. And not only that, but at the moment it appears that the 35 members of the Blue-White Party, Kachol Lavan, are determined to be in opposition. I'm not sure they were as determined to be in opposition in the outgoing Knesset. I'm talking now about the Labour Party, or what was called at the time the Zionist Union. But being in opposition means precisely that. It means opposing any legislative measure that will undermine further the already fragile foundations of Israel's democracy. More constraints on freedom of speech, on freedom of association, more attacks on the court, and that is, by the way, a very sore point. Will also, when they do that, suggest alternatives. So constantly stopping, trying to halt, put brakes on, through creating ad hoc coalitions with one or two parties in the government on specific issues, I'll give you the biggest example. It's going to be religion and state now. It may, and I think it is possible, to prevent further deterioration if the opposition works properly and works together. And that's one level. On the question, by the way, of annexation, that is a disaster. It's a disaster because it will force every single one, regardless of right, center, left, to start thinking about democratic alternatives, and there are democratic alternatives, and some of them are being thought out and actually detailed as we're speaking. That's one level. But and I think it's important structurally as well, because weak oppositions make for weak democracies, and we know that. Second level is one that we should start paying much more attention to, because there are undercurrents in Israeli society of Jews and Arabs of all backgrounds who are saying, we want to live differently. And civil society in Israel is developing alternatives and democratic spaces on the grassroots level. I'll give you several examples. One example is an organization called Standing Together. Standing Together is bringing Jews and Arabs together to form a shared society in Israel. You've got the Israeli version of MoveOn.org, which is protesting any form of discrimination, be it against Jews from Ethiopia or against Haredim, ultra-Orthodox, in certain areas. And you have some really interesting movements that are talking about creating Jewish-Arab partnerships within Israel. In other words, where is social justice demand coming from? It's coming from civil society. So what can be done? Truth be told, a strong opposition doing its work properly, taking advantage of every opportunity, and at the societal level, promoting and encouraging the alternatives that exist and are taking place at the civil society level.
I would add, I agree with everything you said. I would add to that two other elements. One is, to the Israeli progressive camp or left has to begin mobilizing the American Jewry. Until some time ago, it was very difficult because the American Jewry, particularly the leadership of the organized American communities, said, we cannot interfere in your own business. We are here, you are there. You fight, we don't send our kids to the war, we cannot tell you what to do. But in the last year or two, there is a dramatic shift. And I think that the Israeli public opinion, probably even leaders, do not realize how serious is this shift. And the more and more American Jews are criticizing the policies of the present government, realizing that Israel is moving towards a direction that is far away from the ideas, model, values of the American Jewish community, and they start speaking for the first time. Of course, we always had progressive groups in the United States. J Street is already 10 years old or so. But in the last several weeks, even, you heard criticism of what is happening in Israel from sources, from that never spoke. For example, only 2 days ago, a group of Jewish senators from both parties came out publicly against Netanyahu's declaration that he's going to annex part of the occupied territories. So what the Israeli left should do is mobilize strongly the American Jewry, send people to talk to them, have negotiations with them, agree on a platform. It can be done. That's one thing. The other thing is in Israel itself. If you look at the one of the reasons for the success of the right is their total control over the Israeli discourse. They control the Israeli discourse. They continue to say that the left is, that the media is leftist, but look at the dozen excellent journalists that they have that control the Israeli media. Segal is only one of them, but he's the typical young Israeli darling of the young Israeli journalist because he's so good. And he doesn't cover his political orientation. So it's journalism. It's the think tank community. The think tank community in the last 10, 15 years in Israel has changed dramatically. And the new organizations that were created, Kohelet and others, are very strong. They did to the Israeli politics what the think tanks in what the Republican think tanks in Washington did in the 70s before Reagan came to power. Reagan came to power only after the ground was worked very well by these think tanks. Journals, intellectual journals, etc., etc. So the Israeli left still dominates Dizengoff, dominates the theater, dominates maybe the film industry, but not the intellectual and political arenas and stages and platforms. And the left has to make an effort to develop that tool as well. Today you really don't have newspapers or journals that belong to the Israeli left, and you have half a dozen that belong to the right. So that can be done in Israel. And the third thing, which is only I will just elaborate a little or put emphasis on what Nomi said, is that because so many in Israel center are worried that now the issue is not the territories, yes or no, or the social and economic issues, but the nature of Israeli democracy, the left can enlarge the base to create a democratic front, to bring over people and groups that were not involved in public life in the past, but are worried about the changing nature of Israeli society. Even the term democratic front should be used, though in the past it was used by communists who wanted to influence social democrats, but it should be used in Israeli terms, maybe another better term in Hebrew.
You both mentioned the Jewish-Arab partnership as the key to moving forward. And I'd like to ask you to elaborate on that a bit more. What exactly do you see this Jewish-Arab partnership looking like? Because the Arab population in Israel, by and large, is not Zionist. They're anywhere between non-Zionist and openly anti-Zionist. Do you think that by turning to them more vigorously, the Israeli left, the Jewish left, which is predominantly Zionist, could alienate some of its Jewish vote already, you know, those that are already in its support base, being the Zionist left?
Maybe again, I'll start and your arm can pick up. When we're talking about the Jewish Arab Alliance, it's a term that is not only about the left. It's about looking at Israeli society and saying there are 100% citizens in this country, but 20% of them have been systematically discriminated against and in many respects marginalized and excluded from not only from the discourse, but the best example is good portions of the center left don't even consider them partners of potential coalition government. Now, there cannot be a democratic state where 20% of your citizens are not an integral part of how you think of today and the future. But also, one of the most sensitive points within Jewish Israel is the way certain groups perceive other groups, and especially how Ashkenazi veteran Israelis have looked at Mizrahi Jews. And there is a long history, again, of negligence and discrimination on that basis. But many people are going beyond that. I'll give you an example. On the Arab level, most Palestinian citizens of Israel, they're not Zionists, by the way. It's hardly surprising. It would be surprising if they were Zionists, really. I mean, even to suggest that is somewhat ludicrous. But when asked, do they want to be considered citizens of Israel? The answer is, of course. A great number of them, and their turnout rates in the last election were abysmal, but a great number of them voted for Meretz. Meretz is in the Knesset today because of the vote of Palestinian citizens of Israel. The message is clear. We want to be part of this society, but the basis has to be a basis of equality and mutual respect. The same message is coming from the periphery and from area and from Mizrahim, with 2-3 generations of poverty. And they're saying, we want to be the part of modern democratic Israel, but treat us with respect. Also acknowledge your mistakes in the past. And so when we're talking about a new democratic alliance, Yoram.
Better than the front, right, I agree.
Absolutely. With a new democratic alliance, new democratic movement, we're bringing together people in order to rejuvenate, refresh, update the basic concepts that guided the founders of the state, but the part of the 21st century. So equality and justice and peace are critical, but they have to involve pluralism and tolerance for all citizens of the world.
Let me start with the hypocrisy of using the term Zionism in Israel. It's really an hypocrisy, because there are Jews who are not Zionists. Large part of the ultra-Orthodox community were not Zionists. Many of them are not Zionists today. And they are considered legitimate partners, not only as voters, but as elected people. So I'm a Zionist, but I don't see anything wrong with an Israeli who is not a Zionist, as long as he sees himself as a loyal citizen of the state, and he supports the existence of the state, the strength of the state, the security of the state, the development of the state. that gimmick of using the term Zionism was used by the leadership of the Likud, particularly by Netanyahu, to outcast 20% of the Israeli Arabs, to not enable them joining the force of the progressive camp in Israel. That's the whole idea. It's nationalism that is a tool for the right wing against the progressive camp. So don't be shocked when an Israeli Arab is a nice person, a full supporting, contributing citizen, says, I'm not a Zionist. So what? If he behaves according to the law, fine with me. That's number one. And I forgot what I wanted to say the second.
Okay, let's take a few questions from the audience.
Sorry?
Let's take a few questions from the audience because we are running out of time. And I'd like you to keep them short so that we can squeeze in as many questions out of those that came in. There's one question by Marsha G. Yerman. As an American progressive Jew, I am constantly being attacked on the left and the right. Those on the left characterize Israel as a war crime state and part of the colonialist structure. I've tried to discuss the on-the-ground work progressive Israelis are doing, but there is no interest. Thoughts? In other words, how do you put the message across that Israel is more complicated than what people think it is?
Can I answer that question?
Please.
Yoram may want to add. I'm the middle child. I have an older brother and a younger sister. In Israel, they call it the sandwich. And I've always been stuck between right and left. And the way I've dealt with that is just to go ahead and keep enunciating what I believe in. And there'll always be people on my left who want to see the annihilation of Israel, and I'm not going to give them any help. And there are always going to be people on the right who express values that I find to be anti-Jewish as well as anti-democratic, and I'm not going to help them either. So we're fated, you know. One of the most difficult struggles in the world is the struggle for moderation, and we just have to keep plugging along.
Okay, there's another question by John Kibrick. Maybe, Johan, this one's for you. It says, obviously, it won't happen under Trump, but what if any policies can a future American administration implement to encourage a more liberal attitude in Israel? There's talk among the American left about cutting some funding to Israel. What would that help or only feed resentment?
No, I don't think that cutting help to Israel will help, though Israel has to think twice whether we should continue to beg for $3 trillion from the United States every year. We're strong enough not to do that. But what should be done really is explain, Israelis, progressive Israelis should explain to progressive American Jews in particular what is at stake now. And and there's a lot at stake, because I'm afraid that if Trump will not change his policies, but I'm very worried that if in 2 years from now, the Democrats are going back to power, we will see a change, because there is a very dramatic change undercurrent within the Democratic Party. Only the last few days we saw that. And the attitudes, I'll give you a simple figure. The level of support in Israel was for years a bipartisan issue. And 10 years ago, 7 years ago, 5 years ago, 2/3 of the Americans supported Israel. Only less than 20% supported the Palestinian position. Today, among the Democrats, only 25% of them support the position of Israel in the conflict. 25%. Can you imagine what happens if they're back in power tomorrow? Particularly if their leader, the prime minister, the president, will come from the progressive camp of the Democratic Party. So what Netanyahu and his friends did to the position of Israel among American, not only Jews among the American population, is very dangerous. It's anti-Zionist.
There's another question that you partly answered already, Yoram. It's by Claude Goldenberg. It's about the role of the American and diaspora Jews. You said that they should weigh in more forcefully than they did before. You know, in the absence of them voting in Israeli elections, unless you're suggesting that, what kind of levers do you think diaspora communities have and how effective they are and how effective they can be?
They do have levers and they can be effective if they want to do so. What the progressive groups within Israel have to do is to tell them how to do it. For example, to be more involved in the public debate in Israel. The majority of the money that comes from the United States comes to associations and groups in Israel. Where do they have the money to buy all these Muslim Arab homes and houses in East Jerusalem from American Jews? The Israelis do not put more pressure on American liberal Jews to be more involved. It's time to end the story that we American Jews cannot be involved. And we, the Israelis, have to tell the American Jews how they can be involved and show them the way.
If I may, I just want to add one point on what Oram said. I also think that what we've seen in the last few years is a clear distinction between anti-liberalism and support of Israel. And this anti-liberalism comes, by the way, with very large doses of anti-Semitism. Mm-hmm. And it's extremely ironic that for the first time that I recall, some of Israel's best friends are also neo-fascists and racists. And frankly, really anti-Semitic to the core. And therefore, part of the answer of how to bring in American Jewry and world Jewry, and they don't have to be reminded, they're doing it themselves, is to emphasize the fact that being a Jew, Jewish identity in the 21st century, is closely connected to liberal values. And therefore, any attempt to undermine these values is an attack or can lead to attacks on Jews. And it's this connection, which is related to identity and Israel as the key symbol of modern Jewishness, that is so important, because if Israel slips into undemocratic, illiberal positions, it actually harms Jews elsewhere. And it's this damage which I think can be corrected by expanding the alliance, just as Yoram said earlier.
Okay, there's another question from David Abraham. How much sand is left in the hourglass of the two-state solution? And if it runs out, which it will unless Sanders is the next president, will Israeli progressives begin to think about a single binational state?
I think that what people should do is to look at what Shaul Arieli publishes. Shaul Arieli is one of the most knowledgeable Israelis on the West Bank, the settlements, the relations between Jews and Arabs there, the demography, the geography. And if you look at his at his papers, books, articles. He has also now very good pieces on YouTube. You will see that the two-state solution is still very viable, very viable. It's one of the major tasks. That was one of the major aims of the Likud led by Netanyahu, to influence the Israelis and the world that it's too late to continue to think about two-state solution because it's over. It's not over, and it can be solved. We don't have the time to go into details, and therefore I really recommend you to look at Shaul Arieli's papers, articles, or YouTube pieces. It's viable. It will not be viable if the present government is going to annex part of the West Bank. So the next 2, 3, 4 years are crucial.
Just to follow on that and maybe expand on it a bit. Frankly, the answer, the second part of the question, there are a lot of different groups and people thinking about a lot of options that now it would be thoroughly irresponsible not to think of options. But the most important question, and I don't put time hourglasses, I don't know how to do that. The most important question is, what is the quality of a two-state solution? And frankly, all too often, the notion of a two-state solution has been about separation of Israelis and Palestinians. That's not the two-state solution I think of. I think of a two-state solution as open, as a great deal of interaction and cooperation. And given the situation on the ground, we have to start thinking of variations of the two-state solution where there's a lot of cooperation. There is a lot of openness, there's a lot of movement. Because if we don't build up the framework for living together and sharing the land, it's going to be a problem under any scenario. And just to add to that one, really, I think, fundamental comment. We are now in a situation where we have to end the occupation. The occupation is pulverizing Israel from within. And ending the occupation also involves acknowledging the right to self-determination of the Palestinian people. But we have to be flexible about the format and abide by the principles. I think that's so important today because otherwise we'll implode, which is sometimes much more painful than exploding.
Okay, we are quickly running out of time, so just allow our two panelists to make very brief concluding statements. Yoram, why don't you start?
That's not an easy task. I didn't give up, and I don't give up hope. I don't think that it's now with the new government, it's the end of the story. It's the beginning of a more severe battle, and there's no reason to think that that battle cannot be won by us.
I agree 100%. Nothing's inevitable. And we have the agency, and I think the values to bring about change. Now we have to summon up the energy to do it, and we can. But definitely keep trying, because otherwise evil prevails, and we don't want that to happen. Definitely not on the eve of Pesach.
All right, many thanks to you and many thanks to our audience for joining this Conversations with Israel and Palestine. I'd like to thank our panelists, Naomi Chazan and Yoram Perry. Also, thank you to the staff of Partners for Progressive Israel for the work in making this discussion happen. You can go to progressiveisrael.org, that's Progressive Israel, all in one word, and learn more about Partners for Progressive Israel and their future programs. Thank you very much. Chag Sameach and goodbye.
Thank you. Chag Sameach.